This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening, Africa. Welcome to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. It's Friday, June 10th. Thank you for joining us. Here's what's coming up on tonight's show.
Yes, I'm happy that the Secretary General has again highlighted the problem. But until he's ready to propose solutions and use the UN in a way that is not just talk, that has real consequences for violators, nothing will be done.
That's Libya analyst Jason Pack from the Middle East Institute. He was speaking on the UN Secretary General's statement on unprecedented foreign interference in Libya's conflict. And in Mali, the opposition planned a third round of mass protests today over the country's economic woes and persistent insecurity. Plus, the world's rarest gorillas have been photographed in Nigeria. Those stories and more are next on Africa News Tonight. Our top story today, Mali's opposition plans a third round of mass protests today over the country's economic woes and persistent insecurity. The demonstrations, which began last month, have piled pressure on President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. For more, I spoke to journalist Bram Postumus in the capital, Bamako.
So typically these demonstrations are organized in the wake of Friday afternoon prayer, which is the most important prayer in this majority Muslim country. The first demonstration started last month in June, and they have been continuing at a pace of every fortnight. The themes are dissatisfaction about the rampant insecurity, especially in the north and in the center of Mali, and the bad living conditions, poverty, poor healthcare, poor education. These are the grievances, and that's what they're protesting about.
Now, how has the president reacted?
Well, the response from the government has been a series of presidential speeches on national television. The last was last Thursday evening, in which the president, Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, basically repeated the message, which you can summarize in four words: I feel your pain. The problem is that hardly anybody is buying this any longer, and so the various proposals that have been put forward, including the creation of a government of national unity in which the opposition could have ministerial posts, all of which have been rejected. It basically means that we are looking at a prolonged stalemate.
Is there any chance the president will step down?
On the government side, the argument will, of course, be that the president was duly elected in 2018 and that his term ends in 2023. There is very little chance of him stepping down under the pressure of these protests. There is much more chance that there will be a continuation of the sort of muddling through that we have become accustomed to here in Mali. Dialogue, protests, more dialogue.
And what about the opposition?
The opposition has been taking a very hardline stance, and this is very much to do with the presence of an imam who is very popular both in Bamako and beyond. His name is Mahmoud Diko. He used to be the head of the Islamic Council, which is a very influential body here in Mali. And he has decided to veer into political terrain. He's the voice of the protests, if you like, and he has made a name for himself, especially by opposing gender equality in marriage and his opposition to what was termed inclusive sexual education, which he construed to mean the promotion of homosexuality. Both of these are very popular themes, and riding on these issues, he then started attacking the government, attacking the president, and organizing these protests.
That was journalist Bram Postumus speaking with me from the Mali capital, Bamako. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has warned the UN Security Council that the conflict in Libya has entered a new phase with what he called, quote, foreign interference reaching unprecedented levels, end quote. He said that includes delivery of sophisticated equipment while the number of mercenaries involved in the fighting grows. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Kelly Kraft, called for a ceasefire and withdrawal of all foreign mercenaries. VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi spoke with Jason Pack, a non-resident fellow at the Middle East Institute and founder of Libya Analysis, about the latest Security Council discussion on Libya.
Well, Secretary Guterres is, of course, accurate in his description. The Libya conflict has had ever-increasing foreign interference. The foreign parties are the ones who are decisive in the conflict. It is they who fly the drones and the aerial sorties that determine the progress of the conflict. Despite that accuracy, what they're saying is essentially irrelevant because we've known this for months, if not years, and words on their own won't get anything done. So, yes, I'm happy that the Secretary General has again highlighted the problem, but until he's ready to propose solutions and use the UN in a way that is not just talk, that has real consequences for violators, nothing will be done.
Guterres also said we are very concerned about the alarming military buildup around Sirte and the high level of direct foreign interference in the conflict in violation of UN arms embargo, UN Security Council resolutions, and commitments made by member states in Berlin. Would the United Nations Security Council enact its recent resolution to halt all hostilities in armed conflicts around the world before a massive confrontation erupts in Sirte?
I don't know if they would enact that resolution, but I doubt it would do anything. All of this talk reminds me of the 1927 Treaty of Brest-Litovsk. It was a treaty which outlawed war. And as we well know, a treaty that outlaws war doesn't outlaw war because unless there is a force or a power ready to enforce it, people will still go to war if they think it's in their interest. So it's really a shame because the UN has the ability to pass sanctions or to actually call into being economic and structural things that put pressure on the different states. For example, naming and shaming, blaming the UAE and Turkey by name for the arms that they have introduced, penalizing Russia for using Wagner Group to keep the oil offline. Those things would be concrete. They would get something done. All this talk of outlawing war is going to be as futile as the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk in 1927, which, of course, did nothing to halt the progress towards World War II. It just said it's illegal. What does that accomplish?
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told the UN Security Council that Haftar is ready now to sign a ceasefire agreement while the GNA is seeking a military solution. Is there a practical way out of this crisis to a negotiated political solution in Libya?
I don't know whether to laugh or cry when I hear all of these statements that you pointed out. I say laugh because it's humorous. Everyone says it's not my fault. It's the opponents who are driving the conflict, and no one is willing to take responsibility for their own actions. I believe a negotiated solution is possible, and that would have to start with the oil negotiations, whereby Haftar would lift the blockade, some kind of holding mechanism, such as the existing Libyan foreign bank account, would allow oil money to flow in but not be dispersed. And then you would deal with final solution and status, whereby the Libyan economy would be reformed. That's what people are fighting about. And if that could be sorted out, it could be a win-win for everyone. There is more than enough money to go around if it's distributed fairly. So if we're not talking about something concrete and pressure isn't being put on the different factions in an implementable way, we're not going to be seeing anything moving forward. And therefore, what's likely to happen is more military conflict around Sirte and, you know, bombings by the Russians and the Emiratis in Watiya and Turkish naval exercises. And it does seem that the conflict will continue until a mutually hurting stalemate is reached and people are willing to get serious about consequences.
That was Libya analyst Jason Pack speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi. Nigerian military officials are reluctant to talk about the reported killing of dozens of soldiers by Boko Haram insurgents on a road between Maiduguri and Dumboa in the northeastern state of Borno. The troops were returning from an operation on Tuesday when the attack took place. VOA's Hausa service is in possession of several photos which clearly show bodies of several dead soldiers dumped in an unknown location. The soldiers' faces are easily recognizable, but a military statement claims that only two soldiers were killed, while 17 insurgents lost their lives during the fight. Trucking of goods and humanitarian aid from Cameroon to the landlocked Central African Republic has slowed to a trickle, raising tensions on both sides of their border. Despite an agreement that Cameroon drivers who tested negative for COVID-19 would be given access to the Central African Republic, testing kits are in short supply at the border, forcing some trucks to wait weeks to cross. Journalist Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
El Hadj Umaru, the head of Cameroon's Land Freight Transportation Bureau, says hundreds of trucks at the border town of Garoua Boulaye have not been given access to the Central African Republic. He says all attempts to convince CAR transport and health officials that the drivers have tested negative for COVID-19 in Cameroon have failed.
Nous avons beaucoup de difficultés de servir le test centrafricain était un parcours de combattant.
Umaru says this week, Cameroon's transport minister assured truck drivers that the CAR will accept COVID-19 test results done in Cameroon hospitals. But Umaru says the COVID-19 test results done in Cameroon are still rejected by CAR border officials. He says he is scandalized that trucks, goods, and humanitarian aid are blocked at the border for several weeks. The CAR and Cameroon sealed their borders in March to stop the spread of the coronavirus after both countries recorded cases of COVID-19. The landlocked CAR entered an agreement with Cameroon to allow passage of humanitarian aid and goods from Cameroon's seaside town of Douala to the CAR capital Bangui. According to the agreement, only truck drivers who tested negative for COVID-19 were to enter the CAR, but the plan was crippled by a shortage of tests at the border. The drivers, who are mostly Cameroonians, started carrying out the tests in local hospitals. But CAR officials began rejecting the results last month when the number of confirmed COVID-19 cases in Cameroon increased to more than 13,000. On Monday of this week, delegates from the two countries held a crisis meeting at Garoua Boulaye, and the CAR agreed to recognize COVID-19 test results carried out in Cameroon. But CAR Transport Minister Arnaud Djoubaye Abazeni says the decisions made at the meeting were not final. Abazeni says the mixed commission that the presidents of Cameroon and CAR created to manage land transport will meet to examine threats caused by COVID-19. He says only that the commission can address all the misunderstandings caused at the border as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. Abazeni said that once goods and supplies are brought to the border, CAR drivers will transport them to Bangui. He said his country will also consider COVID-19 test results conducted in the CAR in case the border post runs short of rapid diagnostic tests. Cameroon's Minister of Transport, Jean-Ernest Ngalé-Bibéhé, says Cameroon wants a solution to the crisis as soon as possible.
L'autre problème que nous avons rencontré, c'est celui, bien entendu, qui...
He says the coronavirus pandemic preoccupies all governments in the world, and there is no state that will want to joke over COVID-19. He says it is in the interest of Cameroon and the CAR to work together and rescue their collapsing economies. The Central African Republic depends on the Douala seaport for about 95% of its goods and humanitarian aid. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Jason Batingan in Washington. Amid rising tensions over Zimbabwe's economic woes, the government has awarded the security forces much higher pay raises than all other civil servants. The move has triggered condemnation from workers' groups. Journalist Eddie Gondo gives us more.
Early this week, the government announced what it called COVID-19 allowances for soldiers and police ranging from 5,000 to 8,000 RTGS dollars. The rest of the civil servants, including teachers and nurses who have been striking, are only 1/5 to 1/6 as high. President Mnangagwa last month awarded government workers a 50% salary hike and a non-taxable $75 monthly COVID-19 allowance for 3 months, cushioning them from the economic crisis that has eroded earnings and savings. The government spokesperson called them a gift, but they haven't been awarded yet. Workers' unions and other critics have called the huge disparity in allowances a divide-and-rule tactic and part of government attempts to ease growing dissension in light of the opposition's call for a July 31st national strike. The president of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, PTU, Takaba Firajo, says other civil servants are not immune to the economic wars and cannot be expected to tighten their belts while others loosen theirs.
The president is making a statement that those with access to Amari deserve better payment. We are not begrudging our brothers in the army who were awarded even 7,000. Our point is very clear that they remain underpaid. But our problem is this disparity and unexplained disparity and an attempt to divide the civil servants and to appease the army so that perhaps it could be amenable to those in power and be used to brutalize the general populace that are suffering or that have tested positive to poverty.
Joe says teachers are bearing the brunt of the economic hardship, even though they play a critical role in building the nation.
Basic commodities have gone on skyrocketing, affecting the very teachers that have all tested positive to poverty. It is a clear message from the president that he is against the teachers. And it is a clear message that the teachers must liberate themselves. It is the responsibility of all teachers to realize their own liberators. Above all, the safety and the health of teachers is not guaranteed, let alone their welfare. Yet the government is calling on teachers to open schools on the 28th of July. It will be very difficult to open schools without a priority of the health and safety of the teachers, let alone their welfare.
With inflation hovering around 1,000%, prices skyrocketing and people suffering from shortages of food, water and fuel, there are increasing calls for mass action. PTUZ says teachers' issues must be addressed independent of the national strike. The Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, Peter Mtasa, says that there's an impasse between public service unions, which want their salaries pegged in US dollars instead of the steadily weakening local currency, and the government.
Even those who appear to have been favored, no one amongst the working class in Zimbabwe is well off. We are all enslaved. So those who appear to have been favored should also realize that they've not been favored. And they should also not be used to brutalize workers who are demanding a legitimate demand for a decent salary.
Government officials remain adamant that any strike action would be a violation of COVID-19 regulations. Workers maintain that they are out of other options despite threats of a clampdown. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Costs of hitting the road keep rising in Zimbabwe as the country's economic crisis drags on. Already hit by major increases in petrol prices, drivers now have to deal with an increase in tollgate fees of more than 300%. Reporter Kudzai Zvinavashe has more.
The new tollgate fee hikes announced Wednesday leave light motor vehicles paying local 45 RTGS dollars, where it used to cost 10 RTGS dollars. Minibuses will pay 70 RTGS dollars. Previously, they paid 20 RTGS dollars. In US dollar terms, that is about 70 cents for the light vehicles and just over 1 US dollar for minibuses. The price hikes are over 300%, and motorists are torn on what this means for them. Michael Zhou, a Harare resident who works on the capital's outskirts, has to pay toll fees going to and from work. He is not impressed by the fee hike.
Ah, you know what? It doesn't make sense, you know. It doesn't make sense that you just wake up and they change everything. We are not having any hikes on our salaries, but they are hiking toll fees.
Motorist Welcome Shiri says the hike is appreciated given the economic climate.
Personally, I think this was necessary considering that the bond note has been losing value over the past few months. I think $45 is reasonable because $10 wasn't making any sense. I think we're moving towards the right direction.
Zimbabwe is reopening its economy, including domestic tourism, following its COVID-19 lockdown. Dexter Shumba, a motorist who has enjoyed domestic tourism before the COVID pandemic, says the toll hike will have a bearing on domestic tourism.
We'll look at the tourism sector. Already people are very reluctant to move around because of the COVID pandemic. And so by increasing the toll gate fees is going to stop anybody who might have been inclined to go out and travel from doing so, because now it's no longer that they're worried about their health, but also their pocket.
Government also announced that fees for vehicle license and registration are going up. Amid the fee hikes, Shumba and Joe say it is important that government realize that people's incomes are not being increased accordingly. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
In Nigeria, conservationists say photographs show that critically endangered cross-river gorillas, which are the world's rarest gorillas, appear to be reproducing. The photographs, taken in southern Nigeria's Mbeya Mountains, show both adult and multiple babies of the rare subspecies. Mike Mbonier reports from Lagos.
Conservationists confirmed an Associated Press report that about 50 cameras, which were set up in 2012 to track the gorillas, captured multiple images of them in Nigeria's Mbe Mountains Community Forest, Afi Mountain Wildlife Sanctuary, and Cameroon's Kagwene Gorilla Sanctuary. Cross River State in southern Nigeria has land and sea borders with Cameroon. Conservationists say about 300 gorillas are believed to be alive in the two countries. Andrew Dorn is the Nigeria Director for the Wildlife Conservation Society.
We estimate that there are roughly 25 to 30 gorillas remaining in the Mbeya Mountains. Unfortunately, there's no reliable method to count them exactly, so our estimate has not really changed much over the past 10 years.
He says the area lacks legal protection because it's not a forest reserve or national park, but that the gorillas are protected by federal and state laws, making it illegal to hunt or capture them. Don says the Mbeya Mountain gorillas have been protected by 9 surrounding communities since 2007.
The approach taken by WCS is in-situ conservation, which means that we aim to protect the gorillas in their natural habitat, to protect them from hunting and illegal logging. We have no plans to send any of the gorillas abroad for breeding. Our goal is to ensure their safety inside the Mbeya Mountains.
Don says the society also works with cocoa farmers around the Mbeya Mountains. He says though cocoa is one of the main cash crops in the area, it is also responsible for deforestation. He says the farmers have been persuaded to ease the problem.
By working with local farmers, we've been helping to replant old farms with new improved varieties of cocoa, and in that way, reducing rates of deforestation in the region. This will allow gorillas in the Mbeya Mountains to travel to see other gorillas in surrounding areas so they'll not be isolated and there can be genetic exchange, ensuring their survival in the long term.
Von says the Wildlife Conservation Society is working hard to ensure that the gorillas are protected in their natural habitat. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
That wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. For all latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, McPhil Yavaro, and our entire team, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.